Air travel is the fastest growing source of greenhouse gas emissions worldwide. A good fact to know if you are a self-styled environmental leader. Prince Charles learned that the hard way last week when he was accused of hypocrisy for planning to fly 11,000 kilometers on a jumbo jet to receive an environmental award in New York. And I'm sure Tony Blair wishes he could take this answer back. This is what the British Prime Minister said when he was asked on Britain's Sky News if he would give up his tropical vacations.
I mean, I would frankly be reluctant to give up my holidays abroad.
Well, actually, it'd be a good message, wouldn't it? Holiday closer to home.
Yeah, but I personally think these things are a bit impractical, actually, to expect people to do that.
Well, that was then. Much later, in full damage control, Mr. Blair said he would purchase so-called carbon offsets to cover his family's Christmas vacation to Florida. The cost of those was about the equivalent of $200 Canadian. It's a simple idea. You calculate your greenhouse gas emissions and invest in energy efficiency, clean energy, or reforestation projects, mostly in the developing world, to cancel out or mitigate those emissions. And the Prime Minister has all kinds of company on the carbon offsets bandwagon. Bands, in fact, from the Rolling Stones to Pearl Jam to Coldplay, invest in offsets to counter the emissions they cause when touring. The Turin Winter Olympics and the 2006 World Cup went carbon neutral through offsets, all heeding the call of Al Gore, whose An Inconvenient Truth was billed as the first carbon neutral documentary.
Consider this. Make a decision to live a carbon neutral life. It is easier than you think. It really is. It means reduce your carbon dioxide emissions with the full range of choices that you make, and then purchase or acquire offsets for the remainder that you have not completely reduced.
Well, there you go. That's Al Gore in An Inconvenient Truth. We're going to find out more about carbon offsets from Hadi Dawlat Abadi. He is the Canada Research Chair and a professor in the Institute of Resources, Environment and Sustainability at the University of British Columbia. He is also the executive director of an offset company called Cool Drive Pass and a co-founder of offsetters.ca. Professor Dawlat Abadi joins me from our Vancouver studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Amir. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, nice to have you with us. First of all, explain how companies such as Cool Drive Pass and offsetters.ca actually work.
Well, some of them are simply in the retail business in the sense that they take bulk offsets offered to them through other means and offer them to potential people who volunteer money in order to reduce their climate impacts. We do both sides of the equation. We both source offsets and try to market them to people who are interested in having a more friendly environmental impact.
So if I'm feeling a little bit environmentally guilty about my driving, what do I do with Cool Drive Pass?
Well, the simplest thing you might imagine, you just go to the website, cooldrivepass.ca. You are asked to specify the vintage and model of your car and how far you drive. And we'll calculate for you how many tons of CO2 you emit because of your driving habits. And then you're given an opportunity to pay for projects that would nullify those emissions through energy savings and renewable energy investments. So you can have the pleasant feeling of driving around without having impacted the climate.
Okay, well, let's look at that a little more closely. Let's say a Honda Civic, fairly new. And in a year, somebody puts 20,000 kilometers on it, what would it cost to offset greenhouse gas emissions?
That would be emitting about 5.5 tons of CO2, which is kind of surprising to most people. And that's another one of our roles, is to kind of hold up a mirror to your life and say, these are the impacts you create in the Earth system. So that'll cost about $110 to offset.
$110 for the year?
For the year.
And where will that money go?
Well, the money goes into lots of projects. We have projects in Africa with our partner Climate Care, which is the most well-respected UK sourcing of offsets, where they invest in compact fluorescent lights and other mechanisms in which African livelihoods can be improved while reducing their energy consumption. And locally, we are involved with ground source heat technology, which allows us to heat and cool our homes for about a quarter of the energy that we would normally. And those are slightly more expensive projects. By using the money that the volunteers provide, we can make them affordable to many, many more companies, federal government, provincial government, and investors.
Okay. And so geographically, is it mostly in the developing world where this money will be spent?
Actually, my own interest in setting up Cool Drive Pass and Offsetters.ca with James Tansey, the co-founder, was to create opportunities here locally because the opportunities for offsetting throughout Canada are legion and very much underutilized.
Tell us as well about Offsetters.ca. There's a deal between Offsetters and WestJet. What is that?
With WestJet, it was a wonderful gesture on their part. We were trying to work out the logistics of having us be an option on their reservation system. So when you're making your travel reservations, you could say, I want insurance, I don't want insurance, I want a window seat. And then you would say, I would like to fly without having an impact on the environment. And they said, you know, that's actually getting to be very complicated. Why don't we just buy all the offsets for any traveler who comes through your website? And that's what they've been doing since October. So if you go to offsetters.ca and click on the WestJet link, you will go into the normal reservation system for WestJet. You will not pay a penny extra, but they will pay the offsets for your flight.
So they do that for all flights or only flights booked through that are routed through your site?
They do it for all the flights routed through our site because that, to them, indicates that we're interested, that the traveler is interested in offsetting their emissions.
How much would it cost in carbon offsets for, say, a round-trip flight between Vancouver and Toronto?
About $15. So if you go, you know, if you're going in a refundable ticket, it's about 1% of your ticket. If you're going in a discount ticket, it's about 2% of your ticket price.
And how do you arrive at that number? What do you do to calculate that?
Well, there are two sides to the calculation. One is the price of the ticket, of course, which we all look up on the website. But the other side of it is we calculate the cost that we need to add to the projects that I told you about in order to make them a goal. And so we just, and then how much savings they create, and just apportion it appropriately.
How effectively do these projects do what they are supposed to do, offsetting or neutralizing the greenhouse gas emissions that we create?
I think there are good offsets and bad offsets, and the reason we set up our company and our own process of sourcing offsets was because we were not very pleased with all the bad offsets out there. There are quite a few relatively inexpensive offsets out there that actually don't have any impact on the climate system, maybe even exacerbate the problem.
How can we spot them?
If it's too cheap, it's too good to be true.
Okay. Well, I mean, you know, $15 extra for a round-trip flight Vancouver to Toronto isn't necessarily that expensive. To think that I can eliminate the damage that I'm told I'm going to do if I fly by handing over another $15.
Well, sure, that would be for your own seat on that airplane. It's not the whole of the airplane, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if the whole airplane was to be offset, it's 200 passengers, and it's $15 for each of those passengers.
Okay, I'm with you now.
you're with me now?
Yeah. Well, what do you think of reforestation projects as offsets?
One of the problems with reforestation is that we have no idea what to plant in forests in Canada for the climate of 80 years from now. And there has been a lack of sufficient funding and research and a change in practice in the forestry industry. And if we were to invest in plants as we are right now, in cultivating forests in the way we are right now, we'll just be planting plants which are not suitable for the climates of the future, and they will probably burn or get impacted by massive pest attacks. And the likelihood that they'll actually be standing while you're expecting them to be sequestering carbon and storing them away is low. So they are a possibility, but they're a high-risk possibility in Canada.
So if someone is considering offsets, might it not be better for the environment for that person just to leave the car at home half the time, take the bus instead?
My first suggestion would be, if you can, don't drive. If you can, don't fly. But if you need to, then these are the ways in which you can make your activities even more climate friendly.
And how long before the impact of the offsets that you think are the best ones are felt?
In order to stabilize the climate system, we need to go to emissions totally of the whole globe of 2 gigatons of carbon or less. At the moment, we're at 7. So imagine a world in which we have more people, maybe 10 billion by 2050, where we're hoping that everyone is better off, and where we need to reduce our emissions from its current level to less than a third of its current level. To do so, we require decarbonization. You know, our economies should become separate from carbon at a rate of 3% a year, every year. The only time we've actually achieved that was because of the economic collapse after the OPEC oil crisis. And so this requires really careful planning an investment in projects that can really reduce emissions. Ground source heat pumps really reduce emissions. That's why I'm engaged with them.
How mainstream is the idea?
I would say that the amount of coverage we've had over the last two or three months has been extraordinary, but the previous year and a half when we were trying to push the idea, we didn't have any traction at all.
So it's changing a bit.
Yeah, since October we've had more than 10,000 hits on our sites and more than $100,000 of sales at WestJet, for example, which led to offsets.
Now, there are those who think that offsets allow people in the West to carry on business as usual with a small surtax of sorts and instead of changing the way they live. In other words, you know, the wealthy Western countries pay a couple of bucks and forget about it. What do you think?
Well, I actually think that if I've persuaded you to go to Cool Drive Pass and look up your car and see how much you emit, I have made more than a marginal change in the way you look at your own life and the impact on the environment. And that by having real projects, projects that do reduce greenhouse gas emissions, we've done more than just a... What was that? Sorry, there was a Catholic procedure for buying your sins. I've forgotten what it was called.
Buying indulgences.
Buying indulgences, that's right. Yeah, I don't think, I think that bad carbon offsets are indulgences, but good carbon offsets are not.
Okay, well, thanks for giving us some perspective.
Thank you so much.
Hadi Dawlat Abadi teaches at the Institute of Resources, Environment and Sustainability at the University of British Columbia. He is the executive director of Cool Drive Pass. Well, the carbon offset industry is growing exponentially, but by some accounts, the industry is worth the equivalent of about $140 million Canadian dollars as of last year. It could be worth as much as $1 billion worldwide by 2009. Carbon neutral even became the new Oxford American Dictionary's word of the year for 2006. But that rapid growth and the Tony Blair controversy is putting carbon offsets under the microscope. Just last week, the U.S. nonprofit group Clean Air, Cool Planet released a report that gave only 8 out of 30 carbon offset companies a passing grade. According to the group's study, there is no guarantee that offsets sold by the other 22 companies take carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere permanently. And in Britain, an all-party parliamentary environmental audit committee has launched a probe of the carbon offsets industry. Conservative MP Tim Yeo is the chair of that committee, and he joins me from a London studio. Good morning.
Hello there.
Can you give us some idea of what your committee will be looking at? What kinds of questions you'll be asking?
Yes, we're concerned that the carbon offsetting market is one that's growing very, very quickly, and it's almost entirely unregulated. So we have three specific concerns and one general one. The specific ones are, firstly, that where people are buying into a carbon offset scheme, that the scheme should be one that's genuinely additional to what would otherwise have been done. We don't want these schemes to be subsidizing activity which would have taken place anyway. Secondly, because there's very little monitoring of the schemes, we want to make sure that the carbon reductions which they claim to achieve actually are achieved. And thirdly, we want to make sure that the money's being used properly and that the same schemes are not being sold, as it were, twice over. Perhaps there should be some sort of voluntary code which promoters of carbon offset schemes could adopt. And that at least would then provide consumers with some guidance if they were buying into a scheme which had committed itself to a certain level of standards and perhaps would be subject to random audit from time to time. That would be reassuring for the people who are spending their money. Those are the specific concerns. The general one is that if too much attention is paid to carbon offsetting, we may ignore the even more urgent issue of trying to reduce the carbon impact of our activities, whether it's in energy use or transport or whatever.
Mm-hmm. I want to ask you about the Prime Minister's trip. Do you think that by buying carbon offsets, Prime Minister Blair will counteract any damage that his flight, it was his vacation flight that caused the kerfuffle?
It'll be partly counteracted, but not entirely, I think. I think most people accept that a certain amount of long-haul air travel is a necessity. The world's economy could not function without it. I think that it becomes more difficult if people are in the habit of often frequently taking long-haul holidays, because those clearly are not so essential. You could find alternatives that are closer to home. And he is the Prime Minister. He has been talking a lot about the need to cut carbon emissions. So it's caused a certain amount of amusement, I think, here in Britain. Nevertheless, as a matter of principle, I think it's a good idea if people who go on long-haul flights should be in the habit of buying offsets. I think that's a good thing to encourage, and I hope more people do it.
Now, your committee is going to ask whether that offset should be mandatory for air travel, is it not?
Yes, it is, and I think that that's not an issue on which I've yet formed a view. We want to take the evidence and consider it, which will take us a few weeks to do. But I think myself that voluntary action at this stage is probably as much as people would be willing to accept. But it may be that if that voluntary action is inadequate, and it may be that if the airline industry is not doing enough other things to accelerate the introduction of more low-carbon, fuel-efficient airplanes and so on, then a mandatory scheme might become necessary in due course.
How big of an issue have Tony Blair's comments about air travel become in Britain?
Well, I think that the concern is that aviation is the one area of transport where not a great deal seems to be yet have been done to address the problem. There aren't any low emission aircraft, and aviation is expanding rapidly all around the world. And none of the solutions that are proposed are going to make much difference in the short term. So there is an anxiety about flying, and therefore any comment the Prime Minister makes about flying is, I think, very sensitive and potentially very controversial. And alongside the controversy about long-haul flights, we also have a domestic aviation market in Britain, which is a much smaller country than Canada, and some of those flights take place along routes where there are adequate train services.
Well, you have in fact said that domestic flights should be phased out within the UK within a decade. Are you getting support for that view?
Well, I'm certainly getting lots of comment for that view. There's a certain amount of support for it. I think that you could only achieve that if you rapidly upgraded the train services. We already have very good train services now between London and Paris and London and Brussels, very important routes which go through the Channel Tunnel under the sea in the English Channel. Those show that for journeys up to 300 or 400 miles, trains can be competitive. And what I want to see is the train service in domestic routes within Britain improve to the point at which people actually don't want to fly. But that process could be accelerated if we tax the domestic flights more heavily and use the proceeds to invest in an improved rail infrastructure.
Now, just one more question on carbon offsets, if I may, before I let you go. There are critics who say they are really just a way of letting people from rich Western countries sacrifice a little bit of money to ease their conscience instead of making real sacrifices to their lifestyle. What do you think about that?
There's a grain of truth in that. But I think that in the short term, they should still be encouraged, because if we cut the carbon emissions, even in a developing country, there is a benefit to the planet's environment. The concern we must all have is about the build-up of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, and that build-up is increased whether the emissions come from Mozambique or from Montreal. And the fact is that anything we can do in the short term to reduce that build-up will be helpful in the long term. What offsets should not do is deflect attention away from the need that we all have, particularly in rich Western countries like ours, to try and develop more low-carbon lifestyles.
Mr. Yeo, thank you for sharing your thoughts with us today. Good luck to you in this audit.
Thank you very much. You're very welcome.
Tim Yeo is the chair of a British parliamentary committee investigating carbon offsets and the carbon offsets industry. You're listening to The Current on CBC Radio 1 and on Sirius Satellite Radio 137. I'm Anna Maria Tremonti. Well, in the wake of the Tony Blair climate kerfuffle, the Labour government has just announced new standards for carbon offset programs. It could mean consumers would have to spend twice as much for their offsets, but it may also bring a measure of accountability to the offset industry and discourage less scrupulous and less effective offset schemes. But critics of the carbon offsets industry question the effectiveness of even the reputable companies. Kevin Smith is a researcher with Carbon Trade Watch, which is a project of the Transnational Institute. He's also the co-author of a book called The Carbon Neutral Myth, Offset Indulgences for Your Climate Sins. And that will be published in just a couple of weeks, and we have reached Kevin Smith at his home in London, England. Hello.
Good morning.
Now, we've heard that metaphor of indulgences applied to offsets a few moments ago. Tell us why you chose that metaphor for the subtitle of your book.
Well, I think there's a lot of legitimate comparisons. Indulgences were the Catholic Church taking a market-based approach to sinning. The idea was that someone had a surplus of good deeds that they could then sell at a markup at retail price to someone who wants to salve their conscience. Looking back at the system now, we can see how ridiculous it was. It was basically a way for the church to raise funds by exploiting people's guilty consciences. And in the same way, offset schemes are basically a way for companies to make money by exploiting people's concern about the climate change.
So
hopefully in the near future, we're going to be looking back in offset schemes in the same way that we look back on indulgences now, wondering how we could have been fooled by such a ridiculous idea.
So in your view, what are the greatest misconceptions about carbon offsets?
I think the biggest misconception about carbon offsets is that your emissions are somehow magically removed from the atmosphere. Now, when we drive or we fly or whatever carbon-intensive activity we're doing, we're responsible for a certain amount of emissions that are harmful in terms of climate change. And this is a very definite, quantifiable, and real fact. They're in the atmosphere and they're causing harm and you can't take it back. Now, when you purchase an offset, what you're actually buying is a very abstract commodity. It's incredibly hypothetical avoidance of emissions being reduced somewhere else in the world. And it's impossible to quantify something that's as speculative because you can't tell what's going to happen in the future that's going to affect the outcome of such a project. I'd like to, Dr. Hadi Dawlatabadi, who you interviewed before, was talking about good offset projects and bad offset projects and said he was working with Climate Care, a UK-based company, distributing low-energy light bulbs in Africa. And it's interesting he raised this project because, in actual fact, Climate Care's light bulb project is a really good example of this sort of bad offset project.
Why?
What they did, they distributed a number of low-energy light bulbs in townships in South Africa, and then they calculated how much energy had been saved as a result of people using these low-energy light bulbs and then kind of and sold off the emissions reduction as offsets. But now, a few months later on, after the bulbs had been distributed, there was a major energy supply crisis in the city, and the energy company Eskom did a massive distribution of low-energy light bulbs themselves, including the area in which Climate Care had already distributed theirs. So the energy savings would have happened anyway, regardless of the involvement of Climate Care. And you can't kind of predict that in the offsets project. And what Climate Care's effectively sold to its consumers is hot air. It hasn't got the principle of additionality. The reductions would have happened anyway.
Well, we mentioned earlier that the band Coldplay attempts to go carbon neutral through offsets, but one of the projects it invested in turned into a fiasco. Tell us about that.
Well, the Coldplay's been one of the kind of most publicized example of a disastrous offset project. For their second album, they brought in the services of the carbon neutral company to plant 10,000 mango trees in Karnataka in southern India, with the idea that the mango trees would be absorbing the carbon dioxide from the atmosphere and that the villagers would have another source of food with the mangoes. In 2006, there was newspaper reports that 40% of the distributed saplings had died and that many of the villagers involved had been promised money or water that just hadn't materialized. And there was also a huge falling out with their project partner in India, who claimed that the carbon neutral company had a condescending attitude and that they were doing it for their own self-interest rather than for reducing emissions. Now, on top of all this, a month after these reports came out, the project was still being portrayed on the carbon neutral company website as being a glowing success, and fans of Coldplay were still being encouraged to pay money to dedicate a tree in the plantation. And that's kind of really typical of these offset projects in that there's a real lack of transparency and accountability.
Well, let me ask you, so many of these investments go on in the developing world. Why is that? Is it harder to keep track there?
It's partly a question of economics because it's cheaper to do these projects in the developing world. And then it's also partly a question of out of sight, out of mind. The reality is that you're less likely to find out what the kind of negative impacts of a kind of badly managed plantation are if it's tucked away somewhere thousands of miles away from home.
Now,
and apart from that, it's often easier to kind of have the political will to push these projects through in countries in the south without having a proper community participation on whether or not they actually want the projects in the first place.
So will some of your concerns be addressed by the new standards for the offset industry announced by the British government?
On the one hand, I think if it's going to take business away from some of the more disreputable companies, that's a good thing. On the other hand, it's saying that there are some good reputable companies to buy offsets from, and that's just not the case.
So you don't believe in the whole, the practice itself you think is flawed?
The practice itself, I think, is basically it's providing people with the means of buying their way out of their climate responsibility. Some people say it's like giving money to an animal protection charity so that you can keep kicking your dog. It's quite an intimidating fact that in order to deal with climate change, we're going to have to make some pretty serious changes to our lifestyles and to our economies. And it is quite a scary fact of life. But companies are exploiting that fear and selling the business as usual option. The fact is we shouldn't have that kind of feel-good factor of driving our cars around. We should be using our nervousness about that issue to kind of spur us to make the kind of necessary changes.
And you're saying really it should be, it's not an individual thing, it's more of a societal change that has to happen then.
I can't stress enough that it's not just about personal lifestyles, as offset schemes would have you believe. Personal lifestyles play a role and we need to kind of be addressing them, but to have really effective action on climate change, there has to be kind of coming together of people in terms of community organizing and participation and political activism. And without that sort of action taking place, then it's very limited in terms of our response to climate change.
Kevin Smith, thanks for your thoughts today.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's Kevin Smith. He is the author of The Carbon Neutral Myth, Offset Indulgences for Your Climate Sins. And he spoke to us from London, England.